Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great podcast, Bald Men on Campus, an ESPN podcast hosted by Jay Billis, LaPhonso Ellis, and Seth Greenberg. These ESPN personalities give you an all-access pass inside the world of college basketball, talking to the biggest names in the sport. That's Bald Men on Campus. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, offers exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinea Gumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Adrian Wojnarowski, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap, and also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about the sports overlap with what's going on in Ukraine. Also, we have got your stories, wildest thing you ever heard in a barbershop. But first... Okay, so this is one of those days where we try to put together our show and it ain't really that much going on. We don't have that much NFL except to, like, you know, people talk about the problem with the NBA is we talk too much about what's going on off the court. But in the NFL, we do that big time this time of year anyway because y'all love some NFL and nobody complains, right? Okay, it's whatever. It's one of those things that happens. But I get up and I see the highlights from the Lakers and the Pelicans last night. And I'm like, yo, what's going on here? Now, are there more important things in the NBA going on? Maybe. James Harden just showed up with the Sixers. He and Embiid were killing it. But the problem was they were playing the Knicks, who were already dead. So, you know, it's kind of hard to be like, get too much credit. But so, you know, for killing a corpse. But there they were, getting that thing done. I saw my man Jokic throw one of the more incredible passes I've ever seen last night. He is out there toying with people. But right now, and by the way, this is a big negative to me about the NBA. We've got interesting new teams, I would say, that are popping up. The Bulls, for example, would count as a new team. And DeMar DeRozan is playing at a level that's legitimately an MVP level. We got what's going on with the Grizzlies and the emergence of Ja Morant as he is stepping into like full-fledged star superstar territory. Miami's looking like they could be the number one team in the East this year with a new lineup that they put together with a bunch of old school cast that people like me would love. Those aren't the things that really hold our attention and energy. Phoenix, even with Chris Paul being hurt, they were looking like a machine before that. And we barely got around to talk about it. But what is probably the most important thing in the NBA right now, or excuse me, the most interesting thing in the NBA right now? Chaos. Your team's got chaos. We want to show up and talk about the chaos, right? The Nets had all the chaos. We was ready to show up and talk about all that chaos. It looked like Kyrie might be able to come back because these COVID rates got crazy low in New York and they're rolling back a whole lot of stuff, right? I'm almost wondering if they get less interested because they'll wind up having less chaos. But the Lakers, Gabe's team, by the way, just want to point that out there. So in case we need to get somebody's personal opinion on how it feels to go through this, they mired in chaos, bro. They deep in chaos. They swimming in chaos. And last night, they look like they quit against the Pelicans. Like, we're not talking about, like, it looks like they quit against the best team in the NBA. They look like they quit against the team that they're in the play-in fight with. Because, Gabe, this is who y'all are now as the Lakers. It looked like y'all about to be in the play-in again. How that sound? How you feel about that, Gabe?
It doesn't feel good, man. It really doesn't. Franchise sold the soul for a couple of years to LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily turning out the way they had hoped.
And the worst part is you might not be doing this for a couple years of LeBron. It's a chance in some total it could be for 5 years of LeBron, and that may kind of be the problem in the end. Because look, he's still playing excellently. There's no denying that. However, even without Anthony Davis, they should be better than this. Like, one thing I feel like we could always bet on, no matter what, up until this point. And this is where, remember I told you about people got mad at me when I said that LeBron was in decline? Not that he was bad, but he wasn't the player that he was. The player that he was, if nothing else, you could count on LeBron's team being 500 just because they got him, right? Earlier in his career, you could count on them being a legitimate championship contender just because they have him, right? Like, even though they got Russell Westbrook and everything that's coming with him and Anthony Davis being hurt, I feel like they got enough where you would think that with LeBron, they could be a 500 team. As much as LeBron doesn't like the play-in game, or he didn't like the play-in game before it turned into a Los Angeles Lakers tradition, if they weren't a play-in tournament, there's a good chance they would miss the playoffs. It is distinctly possible that this season for the Lakers could come down in the play-in tournament to the final game being at the Staples Center with the Lakers and the Clippers. And the Clippers could keep the Lakers out of the playoffs. The Clippers that have had all the injury stuff that the Lakers have had. In fact, even worse, the Clippers haven't had their best player all season long. Their next best player has been hurt for much of the year. And so last night, where dudes are just throwing passes to nobody, and then you look up and LeBron and Trevor Ariza and Russell Westbrook are arguing with the fans because the Lakers fans are booing them. Because one thing about the Lakers and fans, you don't think of a lot of times that the home fans wind up booing the team. A large part of that is because they'd always been so good that there wasn't much to boo. And they're by and large, hey, man, we just here to kick it kind of crew that winds up at the Staples Center. They were booing them because they quit. They went out there and flat out didn't feel like playing anymore. And this is the question I ask about that. Gabe, you remember LeBron's first year when they were trying to clear the deck to get Anthony Davis. And then they couldn't do it because the Pelicans had just decided that they weren't going to do it. That team folded after that happened. Now, when that happened, I contended then, and I do still contend now, that them young boys needed to buck up and get over it, right? Like, this was a thing. You're now in the league. This is what it is. However, regardless of whether or not I felt like they should have done that, they reacted as they reacted. And they reacted like that in mass. It was a bad play by the Lakers for it to get out the way that it did. And they wound up missing the playoffs. Now, do they make the playoffs if LeBron doesn't have the groin injury? Probably. But still, that was the hand they were dealt. And it looked awful, and the players put a stamp on it and mailed it in, right? Now, do I blame that entirely on LeBron? Not really. Like, I don't think that would necessarily be fair, but does he have a hand in it? Oh, yeah, right? They were doing this because you wanted to do it. They was trying to get your mans and doing all the things that they tried to do to get him because he was your mans. And they tried to bring him in, and it didn't work, and it tanked out a whole season. I think that's kind of hard to argue with, okay? Did LeBron do it again this year? And this time, it would be all on him that he did it this year. The stunt that he pulled in Cleveland, how's it gone since? Like, my brother, who watches more of this than I do, he hit me after, I think it was Friday when they lost, and he hit me and he was like, the Lakers floor is a lot lower than I thought it was. And then it got even lower with that game with the Pelicans. You get now where LeBron is arguing with Bill Orem post-game, and I am not surprised. Bill Orem covers the Lakers for The Athletic, and I'm not surprised because Bill Orem is fair, but he ain't here for the nonsense when it comes to LeBron and all this stuff. Like, he's been very honest and straightforward about what he's seen and where he believes that fault lies and when that fault lies with LeBron. So I'm not surprised at all that that would be the reporter that he would have an exchange with after the game. Like, that part makes sense. But Russell Westbrook, and I respect players for stuff like this, but even still, I recognize the appearances of it where a reporter asked Russell Westbrook if he was going to take the booze home with him. He's like, hell no, I ain't taking no booze home with me. He's like, I got three beautiful children at home. He's like, they can take the booze home with them, right? Which I agree with. That's got to be the way that you look at it. But I also imagine the Lakers fans were looking at that like, oh, damn, so you don't even care? Whether they right or wrong is a completely different discussion. But I'm just telling you, the coach looks like he knows he's a dead man walking, and I don't think any of what's happened this year has been his fault, right? They looking at him like it's got to be fixed. Oh, well, you got to fix it. Bottom line is LeBron gets up at the All-Star game and starts talking about how he's the third Cavalier and he might come back there. And if somebody wants him on their team, then they just need to draft his son and everything else. And it's fair to ask, how would you feel if you was another dude playing on that team? Right? Russell Westbrook out here not getting it done. But by all accounts, LeBron James wanted Russell Westbrook to be there. Anthony Davis can't stay healthy. By all accounts, LeBron wanted Anthony Davis to be there. And by the way, I thought that was the move. I thought that Anthony Davis was the kind of player that you give up everything to get because he's that good. And the truth is, he's not that good. He's still excellent. At his best, Anthony Davis is still a great player. Like, I don't want to pretend as though it's like, man, he ain't even really that good. No, but was he good enough to go through everything that they went through? Maybe not. Did they get a championship out of it? Yes, but I don't think that any of us thought that when they got that championship, that it would be a one-off championship. And what I mean by that is you don't get this very often in the NBA, where you look at an incarnation of a team and they just pop up once and win a championship, and that's it. The only example I can think of a one-off championship, and you can tell me if you can think of anybody else, but the only one that really jumps to my mind is the 2006 Miami Heat, where the next year they got eliminated in the first round. The year after that, they had the worst record in the league. Now, the Lakers obviously are not at worst record in the league space, but you understand what I'm saying here, right? The 2019 Raptors, I wouldn't look at as a one-off because they had been very competitive in the East leading up to that point, getting to Eastern Conference Finals. They still had a pretty good season the year after that, right? Like, it was part of an arc, and it, of course, involved the Kawhi Leonard trade. But with the Lakers, they've been basically terrible for 10 years, with the exception of 1 year. I can't think of any example that's like that. The thought was that you clear the deck for Anthony Davis, and not only are you winning in the late stages of LeBron's career, but you're setting yourself up for the next stage of Anthony Davis's career, which would get the Lakers back to what they had always been, which was a perennial contender. I want to say in their first 50 years in Los Angeles, the Lakers had missed the playoffs all of 4 times. And now you look at it, how exactly are they supposed to get better? Where's the better coming from? Russell Westbrook has a $45 million player option next year. You are smoking geek if you don't think he's going to sign up on that. He's trying to sign up on that right now. In fact, he and his agent have already printed that shit out. It's a signature on it. They just waiting for the right date. Like, they done signed it. They just ain't put the date on it yet. If the first day that he can opt in is July 1st, July 1st at 12:00:00:00:00:00:00:01. That thing coming in. They ain't walking away from that $40-something million. You must be crazy. He getting that done. You going to have him. You got Anthony Davis for 50, 60 games, maybe a year. You're going to have LeBron a year older next year. And I have to imagine that whole franchise has just got to be kind of sick and tired of this. They've got to be. Because the thing is, they made the call. And again, a call I don't blame them for. If you're going to have LeBron James at this point in his career, he's going to run the place. And also, to be fair, the Lakers themselves demonstrated no proclivity for running things. There was no reason walking in that door that LeBron did not look around and say to himself that I could do a better job of running this place than they could. And so he and Rich Paul have come in here and run that place. But man, don't nobody like that. Especially if the way you running it ain't going. Ain't nobody trying to be part of that. No matter how mediocre I think the Lakers front office is, no matter how poorly run I think the Lakers are as an organization, they don't want that. They don't feel like that. And now the man's come in and he ain't actually been no better. And so what the Lakers have become again is relevant, which they weren't for about 5 years, right? They're back. They're relevant for all the wrong reasons. There's nothing positive in their relevance as it stands. And to me, what's probably got to be the most disheartening thing right now for the Lakers is LeBron James, if I'm not mistaken, is leading the league in field goal attempts per game. Has that ever happened? I don't believe that has ever happened. That's never been what the program has been if you're going to have LeBron. And as much as I don't think they have a great roster around him, it's really hard to lead the league in field goal attempts and you play on the same team as Russell Westbrook. That is not a simple thing for you to do. This is what it's been. It's never supposed to be like that, right? Like, that's not why you want to have LeBron. And I don't think that that's a matter of LeBron doing that because he's trying to get the all-time scoring record or anything else. For whatever reason, he's decided looking around that that's the best play. But it also doesn't feel like winning basketball. And the thing about LeBron, no matter what, at every step in his career up until this point, that you could always say is that he played winning basketball. When we was out here trying to make him take shots that he didn't think were the shots to take, he kept passing on the shot when he thought it was the right thing because he thought it was winning basketball. It always was. Does it look like he's playing winning basketball right now? But also, to be fair to him, it wasn't supposed to be this. It was supposed to be a situation where he could defer more. It was supposed to be a situation where he could start transitioning this into Anthony Davis. And that hasn't happened. Partially because Davis can't stay on the floor. But even when Davis is on the floor, he ain't the guy that you can turn this thing over to. Like, some dudes just ain't the number one for a great team. And he appears to be the guy who can't do it. But once it gets to the point where you guys look like you're just not trying anymore, who gonna be the one to come in the locker room and be like, yo, this shit gotta stop? Can it be LeBron? The dude that was just talking about how he the third Cav? Right? Can he be that guy? I don't know. Like, is that room going to be in a place to listen to him? Like, here's how you know the Lakers down bad. They went and got Alex Caruso out of there, and they went and got them another fan favorite. And I don't even see nobody talking about it. And the bar for the fan favorite is low. I saw him pitch Klay Thompson's shot the other night. They normally want to retire your jersey by the end. Y'all can't even find satisfaction in the white dude. Damn. That's an unfortunate break for you fellas, man. And ladies. And shout out to my non-binary homies also. But Lakers, fans, this is who you are now. This is what your team is. You've been mad at me for 2 years for a lot of the things that I've had to say about your team. You have accused me of disliking your team. In fact, I did a test shoot for this other project that I'm working on called Game Theory, which premieres March 13th on HBO and HBO Max. And we had somebody in for an interview, and he was like, I'm getting the feeling you don't like the Lakers. And I'm like, no, I don't have a problem with the Lakers. I don't like y'all. I don't like the way y'all get down. I don't like the way y'all talk to me. I don't like the way y'all appreciate or take in my honesty. I don't like the fact that even after I called you out, not a single one of you was like, damn, Bomani, you were right about Russell Westbrook. Why don't y'all want to tell me I was right about that? Why don't y'all want to tell me I was right when I told y'all this team wasn't going to win no championship? Why don't you appreciate that I was trying to be helpful to you? Why don't y'all want to get what I was trying to say about LeBron James? Though excellent, you're not a championship contender simply by his presence on the team. And to be fair to LeBron, nobody fits that description in the NBA anymore. Best player in the NBA is Jokic, and they're not a championship contender just because they have him, or even like, I guess they're going to be at five. Well, I guess there goes my point. They're going to be at least 500 just because they have Jokic. The Lakers can't do that just because they have LeBron. They can't. This is what it is. This is your squad. Y'all was out there Sunday night looking like losers. How's it feel to feel like a loser? I'm not saying you are a loser. I just want to know, how's it feel to feel like a loser? Because I know you feel like a loser right now. And I would never say you're a loser because I care about your mental health. But I know you feel like losers right now. And I can maybe help you out if you tell me how it feels. How does it feel? I'm here. It's a safe space. All right, man, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I consider myself to be a fairly worldly person, and I keep up with what's going on in the world. But since I got off the tweets, it ain't been as easy for me to just like passively keep up with what's going on. I have to actively go seek out the information. And if I'm being real with you, in the last month or two, I done had my head too far up my own keister with all the stuff that I've been out here doing to really keep up with what's going on. And so after Russia invaded Ukraine, I decided to start like reading up on what was going on. And baby, let me tell you something, okay? I'm not judging you guys for this, but I know enough of y'all. Y'all ain't keeping up with the news like that. I get that. And all I'm telling you is you need to read up on what is going on in Ukraine. But I don't know what Ukraine's like motto is. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know what their official "In God We Trust" or "E Pluribus Unum" or whatever that stuff is. I don't know what it is in Ukraine. But if you were to tell me that what Ukraine says about itself is "Mama ain't raised no punks," I get it. They decided that they was ready to fight. Like, Russia decided they was coming. I don't know if you've seen this detail in the story, Gabe. Did you see this? That the president in Ukraine, who, by the way, is an actor who played the president on TV or in a movie or something, and then wound up being elected, just in case you think Americans are the only people who do ridiculous stuff like that. They passed out 70,000 AK-47s to people so they could buck back at the Russians. To people. Now, America, you wouldn't have to do that. And in fact, in America, they would actually have to ask the people, "Hey, we need 70,000 AK-47s. Could those of you who use those AK-47s as proxy for your small penises bring them back so we can give them to some people that's actually going to shoot?" Right? Like, we got all the guns out here and a whole lot of people just got them for trophies. Ukraine is like, "Yo, nuck if you buck." And they are nucking and bucking over there. Nucking and bucking. Anyway, I'm not here to talk about this just because it's like what's going on in the world. I'm here to talk about it because it does provide a very interesting context about sport. And also, when you think about kind of the way the military has been all over our sports for the last 20 years, right? So in our country, we have made a hero of Pat Tillman. And I think that Tillman and his case is incredibly complex, right? I got my own views about all those wars that we got into over there. But I have a recognition that regardless of what I personally believe about those wars and the decisions to engage in those wars, that Tillman looked up and saw his country under attack and decided to give up his career and ultimately his life to go fight. And what happened to him in the end is honestly one of the great tragedies in American history. We've made the decision that we're not going to talk about it, but the idea that he died by friendly fire and that his parents have basically been yelling for anybody to hear for over a decade about the handling of his death and the way that information was disseminated about it and everything else is just absolutely heartbreaking. We needed a hero. We created a hero. And so we created a heroic death for Tillman when in reality, he was killed by his own people. But that's like the guy that we have that decided, "I'm gonna go do this and make it happen." We know who Pat Tillman is because of that. But Pat Tillman was not like a superstar in the NFL before that happened. Bruh, both them Klitschko's is like, "We about to get our cheer and fight." I forget the one boxer's name, the dude that beat Anthony Joshua a few months ago. Buddy was out of the country when it all jumped off and went back and was like, "Yo, let's do it. I'm down to fight also." They are all down to fight, right? And so one thing about the American military, and this is where Tillman is a deviation from what I would say by and large is history. So we got like the example of Ted Williams, for example, who goes over there and fights as a fighter pilot in World War II and also in Korea. But like boxers, for example, Joe Louis went in the army and they had him like doing exhibitions and stuff like that. Like, that's very often what we ask athletes to do. Them dudes is over there fighting. Like, it's wild for me when I watch the video of what's going on in Ukraine. Like, Gabe, can you imagine just seeing a tank roll down your street? Just a tank, just pushing through, right? Like this is one thing because of the way geographically the United States is situated. Like, Mexico ain't gonna try to run up on us. You know what I'm saying? Canada ain't about to just try to run up on us. That ain't about to happen. These dudes in Ukraine, Russia just running up on them and they like, "Kaka, we ready." You see the video? This one dude, a Russian tank stopped on one of these Ukrainian roads because it ran out of gas. Because that's part of what happened here too. Russia thought it was going to be a 3-day trip, so they packed 3 days worth of stuff, and now it's been 5, right? Like, they breath funky as hell out there. Anyway, tank run out of gas. This dude from Ukraine pulls up on him and is like, oh, you out of gas? You need a tow? He says, yeah. He goes, yo, can I tow you back to Russia? They out here popping off to the Russian dudes in the tanks, right? Now, what that also tells me in part is I got my question about how much them Russian soldiers believe in what they're doing. Because the thing about Ukraine is they believe in it. Like, that was the thing about Tillman. Tillman was in that position where he believed in it. And so he went and did it. Like, when you are in a situation like that and you are not the aggressor, but the aggressee, I don't know what the word is, but you know what I'm talking about. You go wind up believing in it, right? Like, that's a new country that hasn't existed, you know, post-1991, right? You know, post-Soviet Union. And they believe in it. All this stuff that we put on the field in the United States, all these things that we do at halftime and during commercial breaks where the soldier comes home and the family's on the floor and they don't even know it, and all this stuff that we sell to make everybody love the military, do you believe it though? Like, I'm asking this question, I guess rhetorically, because obviously it's a podcast and you can't answer me right now, but I do think that's something to legitimately believe in. Do you believe it? Like, do you believe in what it is that they're talking about when they do that stuff? Is it even for you to believe in, or is it really just kind of being presented as advertisement? And I want to be very clear. I'm not saying that the United States and its military are not things that people could slash should believe in. I'm not getting into any such discussion like that. I'm just telling you what it looks like when people really believe in what they're talking about with this military stuff. Is what you seeing over there, is that us? For better or worse, is that us? Is that the way that we're really playing this? And if it's not us, then what are we doing with all this stuff that we're putting on the field all the time? Then what are we doing with the way, you know, that we push this? What exactly is it that we're doing? Now, granted, it's one major difference between most American military endeavors and what's happening in Ukraine. Our stuff is in other places. It's something different when people legitimately believe that they're being encroached upon. You know, like, I feel like sometimes we as a nation, and also in sports, it's like we flex in our military just because to say it's so big. Right. Oh, look at us. You don't want these problems. And those people are over there is like, no, you don't want the problems with us. With us. That being said, I also saw them clips over there of them folks not letting the black people get on the trains. I've also seen that stuff over there about them countries that ain't letting the black people in. That's one thing about wars when they get set up. It normally ain't no heroes. It's normally just people. You can find your way to relate to what they're doing in the moment. But in the end, all of this is being run by people. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. Sometimes trying to flex, sometimes trying to survive. But I can get out here and be like, yo, Ukraine, you know, they bout it. I can say all that stuff. And then I can look at the other side and just be like, but in the end, they people. If you haven't heard, it's brought to you by the new Love Your Car Guarantee from CarMax. CarMax, here to innovate.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, but this first story comes from business.
This is Elsina Lloyd from Business Insider. Housing affordability just hit an all-time low, and it's making home ownership especially unobtainable for Black Americans. The National Association of Realtors reports about only 245,000 of the homes currently listed for sale are affordable to households earning between $75,000 and $100,000. Prior to the pandemic in 2019, about 656,000 homes were affordable. The price increase is attributed to a lack of housing supply that is driving home price growth. This has made home ownership unaffordable for many, particularly Black Americans, many of who earn less than the U.S. median income. In fact, a study from the Urban Institute claims that Black Americans have some of the lowest earnings compared with white men. The organization calculated that in 1963, white families had a median wealth of about $45,000 more than families of color. By 2019, the gap had grown to about $165,000 more than Black families and about $153,000 more than Latinx families. Furthermore, the pandemic has had a tremendous impact on the finances of Black households. This is because Black Americans typically work in industries that have been hit the hardest by the pandemic. As the demographic continues to experience wage and job losses, it's diminishing their purchasing power. In 2021, the home ownership rate was 73.8% for white households and 45.1% for Black households, according to the University of Houston. The home ownership rates represent an almost 29-point difference percentage gap. Until substantial financial gains can be made for Black Americans, the housing market will need to soften to ensure housing remains affordable for all. To do this, more homes will need to be built to meet demand and slow price appreciation. If not, many Black Americans will be squeezed out of home ownership.
Yo, but the thing about it is, this has already been a huge problem for us. Like, this isn't a new one. The biggest reason for the gigantic Black-white wealth gap is everything that had been done for so long to make it impossible for Black people to buy homes. All the steps that were taken after World War II to make it easier for people to buy homes in the ways that we were excluded from those things, and all the things that white people have done over all these years to tank out the value of our homes and leaving neighborhoods when we showed up and everything else, all of that stuff, that's already our biggest burden financially. Is the gap caused by the fact that we don't have generations of home ownership and being able to pass a house down the line, or your parents die and now you get to sell that house and everybody gets to bread. That's always been our biggest holdup. And it keeps going. It gets worse in these cases where you got, you know, the housing shortage led it, where people were out here buying stuff cash. And so, you know, investors and everything else. And so it wasn't just enough to be able to have the money in the ways that you thought you could have it before. Like, all that stuff just winds up getting messed up. And what happened in this pandemic, a good friend of mine made a point at the beginning, and he was like, watch, everything that's going to happen was going to happen already. It's just being accelerated. Like, a crisis like this is simply an accelerant. And so in the midst of this crisis, people who had money made a lot of money, a lot of money. People who didn't have money were really, really struggling. So another thing happens that exacerbates this gap. And then all those people who had all the money, they could just throw it away on buying a house as an investment that they're not going to live in, paying it cash. And then what your Black ass going to do? Right.
All right, Bo, this next story comes from tech.
I'm Jason Ayton, a tech columnist for Inc.com. During the Super Bowl, Coinbase, a cryptocurrency exchange, ran an ad featuring a QR code bouncing around a black screen with no other information until the very end of the spot. If you scanned the QR code with your phone, it took you to Coinbase's website and offered you $15 of free Bitcoin for creating an account. The ad apparently worked, as it generated so much traffic, Coinbase's app crashed. One of the reasons the ad was so impactful is the simplicity of using QR codes to send people to a website. They became especially popular during the pandemic as businesses used them for everything from replacing paper menus on the table at a restaurant to accepting payments. On the one hand, QR codes are great. Since a user doesn't have to input a URL, there's less chance that they'll enter a typo and end up at the wrong place. That's helpful if you're trying to pull up a menu on your phone. Problem is, since the user isn't inputting the URL, it's not always clear where you'll end up. Bad guys can create QR codes designed to send you to sites you'd rather not visit. It's become enough of a problem that the FBI last month issued a warning that says, quote, "Cybercriminals are taking advantage of this technology by directing QR code scans to malicious sites to steal victim data, embedding malware to gain access to the victim's device, and redirecting payments for cybercriminal use," end quote. Part of the pushback to the Coinbase ad is that, in general, you should never scan a QR code that isn't from a trusted source. That's true if it pops up on your TV or if it's on the counter at the smoothie bar, except the entire point of the ad was that it played on people's curiosity. Until you got to the end, you had no idea what the ad was for, and there was nothing on the screen that told you what would happen if you scanned the code. Of course, considering that ads for this year's big game started at $7 million, most people probably assumed the code was legit and wasn't going to steal their personal information. The problem is, if your marketing campaign is based on getting people to do something they otherwise shouldn't, no matter how clever it is, it's worth asking whether that's a good idea. The FBI's warning suggests that people should only scan QR codes that are from a trusted source. So if you sit at a table in a restaurant and the waiter points at a sign with a QR code that says menu, it's probably fine. On the other hand, if you walk up to an ATM machine and there's a sticker next to the screen that says, make your transaction using this code and we'll give you $50, it's probably a scam. In fact, I personally wouldn't ever scan a QR code on a sticker without first asking to make sure it's legit. Also, on many smartphones, the camera app will give you a preview of the link you're about to visit before you tap on it. If it doesn't match what you expected, you're probably better to steer clear. Really, it just comes down to good cyber hygiene. Don't click on links and emails from people you don't know. Don't enter your information on websites without checking to be sure you're in the right place. And don't scan random QR codes, even if they are in a commercial during the Super Bowl.
How do you need somebody to tell you this? Like, I saw that damn thing bouncing around on the screen during the Super Bowl. Not once did I think to myself, I should check out what that is. No, the hell, I should not check out what the hell that is. You dumbasses just, oh man, it's so cool. All it is bouncing on the screen. It must be something neat. And what was it for? Funny money. Not like a direct funny money, but a place where you conduct funny money transactions. Whole Super Bowl was just overrun by funny money. You see all these commercials for funny money, and you think, yeah, I could trust what this QR code is. They wouldn't have me engage in anything that's not trustworthy. The whole Super Bowl was about funny money. And you think that this whole, everywhere you look, funny money, funny money, funny money. And somebody go put something up blind, and you're like, oh, they would never send me down a road that could perhaps do me harm. And then all you do is wind up with a chance to get some funny money. All you cast out is still funny money. More and more, I tried to come around to y'all like, oh, I can see maybe I'm being too hard on the fun. No, it's funny money. All of it is funny money. And I just can't believe that in the era of funny money and everything else, all it takes for you is something bouncing on the screen. I don't even move that fast with my phone. I couldn't be sure that I could get it unlocked and get the camera on and zoom in on it right and be sure that I was going to wind up getting to it. Think about this for a second, too. If they got to trick you into clicking it to go to the site, maybe you don't want to be there. Stop being stupid. And that's not about the funny money.
Hey, it's on TV. I think I'll click it with my phone.
Bo is just shaking his head in silence.
Dumbasses. And they want to look at us like we crazy. That's the worst part about this funny money game. I'm just going to ask you this one more time. When the last time somebody who was making a whole lot of money was offering you ways to make that same money? Yo, man, I got to put you on the game. When has that ever been on the up and up? And I'm not talking about your actual friends. I'm talking about strangers.
All right, this last story comes from education.
The University of California, Berkeley, recently sent thousands of potential incoming students letters notifying them that the school may be forced to freeze its enrollment for fall semester 2022. The situation is the outcome of a lawsuit between Berkeley and a group of neighbors who allege that the school has not properly planned for its growth. Last summer, a Superior Court judge ruled that the school had not conducted a proper environmental review for a planned housing project and ordered the enrollment cap. Berkeley is now asking the California Supreme Court to intervene and lift the enrollment freeze, and administrators say that if the cap is not lifted, that it will harm the educational goals of thousands of incoming students and could harm California's economy. Governor Gavin Newsom recently sided with the university and said, "We cannot let a lawsuit get in the way of the education and dreams of thousands of students who are our future leaders and innovators." If the court does not intervene, Berkeley would be required to cap its enrollment at 42,237 students, which was the university's enrollment in fall of 2020. Berkeley has grown rapidly over the last decade, adding about 20% more students. Neighbors say that that rapid growth has not been well planned for and has impacted their neighborhoods in many ways as the school becomes too big for its surrounding community. This is Dustin Gardner, state politics reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle.
Well, I feel like it's two things, right? It's not just that it's become too big for the surrounding community, but the surrounding community is too expensive for the students, right? Like when I hear that and talk about the inadequate housing plan, you doing like little small town college stuff or whatever, okay, you might be able to find you a little place to live, a little garage, you know, something like that that's not on campus and be something that's affordable. I have no idea how you're supposed to do the I'm a live off campus thing in Northern California in the Bay. Like it just seems like it would just be way too expensive unless your parents can bankroll it. And this is state school. So at least in theory, you're supposed to be having people who like can't do that, you know, but still can afford to go there. But it sounds to me as I hear this This is an extension of the post-2008 financial world of higher education, where states cut so much funding to these schools, in part because they're like, the schools don't need the money because they can get the money back. We just got to charge more for tickets. And we have seen tuition skyrocket all across America. That's part of why you have the student loan issues that you have right now. It's because school just costs so much more. But a big part of why school costs so much more is because the funding stopped. So then rather than fund the schools, they basically were running a loan program and hitting y'all up for the interest. Like, people like, why don't they just forgive all these student loans? Well, because the mechanism was built to do something else. But then add to this that what college is, what it's become, is a job training thing. And because there are now so many more college graduates than they were 50, 60, 70 years ago, whatever number you want to throw on it, and all these jobs require a college degree, you can't just say, well, we're not going to let that many people into college anymore. Because the economy is now requiring that. And so then how are people, there are plenty of jobs that can be done without a college degree. But because we have so many people with college degrees, those jobs are going to people that have college degree, right? Like, I just don't think all these jobs require it, because a lot of jobs we had before didn't require it. It's not that the people aren't smart enough to do it, but this is where this all comes down to. And I really think it rolls back to, we told people that college will pay for itself out of your pocket, not out of your check, not out of your taxes, out of your pockets. And now it's gone out of control because, yeah, they need to increase enrollment because they need more money. That's how the bread's coming in. It's off of that. Our voicemails are also brought to you by the new Love Your Car guarantee from CarMax. CarMax, here to innovate.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
I thought it would be a good time to bring back the barbershop story voicemail. And it looked like I brought it back at a perfect time because you just got a haircut.
I did indeed.
How did it go?
Hey, man, television. You know what I mean? Had to get right for the public, you know. I mean, yeah, like, I get haircuts. Like, I just don't be noticing. This one was just more of a haircut than the ones I've gotten before.
Coincidentally, I got a haircut too, but you couldn't tell that much because I didn't get that much taken off.
See, there we go.
Well, we got some good ones, some interesting ones, certainly. Not everybody left their name and location, but I can understand why at some points. Our first comes from my man in Detroit. Here it is.
Yes, Bomani, I have a crazy barbershop story for you. But let's just say one day I was sitting waiting to get my hair cut, and the news came on. And the news showed two individuals who had allegedly did a felony of robbery. So the headline was, "We are looking for these two individuals." The guy in the chair said, "That is Ron and John," just making up two names. And all of a sudden he realized what he had said, because everybody in the barbershop was like, "We know them cats." And my man, all of a sudden, forget getting his hair cut, got up with the smock on, and walked out.
Yo, why would he even say that was a bad play? Did Roddy John eventually get caught up?
We might have to have a part two of this story.
Yes, yes. If you want to send us an email so we can Google it, I'd appreciate it. We won't tell nobody. We ain't snitching, and we ain't from Detroit.
All right, the second one comes from Tez in the Bay. Here it is.
Yo, Bo, what's going on? What's up, gay? I got to tell you about the wildest thing I heard in the barbershop. This was a while ago, man, but in the barbershop on the weekend, and this dude comes in, and he's talking about how he met this girl. Now, I was a young cat, and he was older. So, you know, I wasn't really tripping too hard, but the story goes, you know, I guess he had met this chick. She was real cool, real fly, and, you know, she had a son that was going to college, and she was so proud of him. And, yeah, you know, he couldn't wait till he was just gushing about it. Just, yeah, she's so dope, and the son is wrong. He's about to go off to Alabama. And, yeah, it just was the story, the talk of the barbershop. He, like, got his hair cut and stayed in there and was talking just for the longest. And so I guess some time went by, and I just remember, you know, going back into the barbershop, you know, later on in that, you know, a couple weeks later, maybe even a couple months later, and we're watching the game, and here comes dude in again, and he can't wait. He, you know, we asking him, you know, hey, what's up, man? The game about to come on. What's up? Let's see where your man at. What number he wear? And he wasn't really too eager to show us, which was really odd. So maybe we thinking he redshirted or something. Nah, as the game goes on, he points him out. Dude was the male cheerleader. Needless to say, it was jokes all around the barbershop. It was like, wow, he pumped him up like he was going to be the next best recruit. That's all I got, man. Y'all have a good one.
I don't know how Buddy thought that was going to play out for him altogether, to be perfectly honest. Like, eventually this was going to be revealed. And the truth is, he needed to go to a different school. If he had gone to Texas A&M, being one of them Yale leaders makes you revered for the whole campus. They as big a stars as the football team is. Texas A&M is the Yale leaders, and it's the walk-ons that play on special teams, and then the actual football players.
It's like he was trying to pull the my girl go to a different school type thing.
Yes, yes, yes. Except what if that school was on television? Like, I'd have just made up a name and a number myself, but I guess at some point he thought his queen might come in here, you know? But like, why don't you just say he going to Alabama on a scholarship? Why do you have to even intimate football? Damn.
Yeah, they got ESPN in the barbershop, I think.
Oh, do they ever? Do they ever? Chevy said, I ain't more famous anywhere than I am in a barbershop or an arena. They the same place.
All right, so this last voicemail, the guy didn't leave his name or where he's from. It's a sports discussion from a barbershop. Interested to hear your thoughts. There it is.
Wildest thing I heard in the shop. I work in a shop. I now own a shop. At the first shop I worked at, one of my coworkers said, Manu Ginobili was a better version of Dwayne Wade. The same dude said that Odell Beckham Jr. was overrated and that Julian Edelman was a better receiver than Odell Beckham. And we let him live, oddly enough.
So, just curious here. Who'd that barber vote for?
This reminded me of in Coming to America when they're having the barbershop discussion. Yes. Rocky Marciano.
Yeah, except at least that was an actual white man. Like, that's where my I don't know if it's white Mike in the barbershop that was doing this. I don't know. But I will say this. There is always one in the barbershop. There is always one. I don't know if anybody talk about politics in the barbershop anymore. I went to a barbershop in a college town with the old heads cutting. So they be talking about that. And the one in that case was Mr. Kirby. I love Mr. Kirby like family. God rest his soul. But Mr. Kirby was that one. Was that one. Right? If there was any way it was a black man's fault, Mr. Kirby was jumping on it. Jumping on it. And anybody that went to Mr. Kirby shop that's hearing me say this, know that. That's how Mr. Kirby got down. I wouldn't call Mr. Kirby no name because I don't think it's that, but Mr. Kirby was a little hard on our people. You know what I'm saying? But when you go so far as to saying Julian Edelman is better than Odell Beckham, baby, we got to call the drop squad. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassane handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Alcina Lloyd of Business Insider. Check out her story on black buyers being pushed out of the housing market at businessinsider.com. Thanks to Jason Aiden of Inc. Check out his story at inc.com, inc.com, about you dummies just clicking any old QR code willy-nilly. And thanks to Dustin Gardner of the San Francisco Chronicle. Check out his story about California public schools and environment rules that are affecting the freshman classes at universities. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.